walk alone. Step by step.
Hey, how's everybody doing tonight? Good. All right. You guys are ready for a joke. Some of you might not like this one. How do you know when two alcoholics are on their second date? There's a U-Haul in the driveway. No? No one can relate? All right. Welcome to the Fort Lauderdale Primary Purpose Big Book Study Group's Thursday night Alcoholics and God Speaker Step Series. I'm a recovered alcoholic. My name's Zach. Thank you for joining us tonight. In a minute, we're going to start our two-minute meditation. So please take a moment to get situated and quiet. Please turn off all devices that will make noise or might/will distract others. We're going to take this time to and let the craziness of the day drift away and get back some focus and a connection with God so we can focus on our speaker tonight. So if everyone's ready, comfortable, let's start the meditation. We're going to say the fog light prayer. If you don't know it, just repeat after me. God, let your love shine through me like a fog light so those who are lost, sick, and dying can find your love through me. Amen. From There is a Solution in the Big Book, page 17. The tremendous fact for every one of us is that we have discovered a common solution. We have a way out on which we can absolutely agree and upon which we can join in brotherly and harmonious action. This is the great news this book carries to those who suffer from alcoholism. And so, in the 12th step, it talks about having had a spiritual awakening as a result of the steps. And since they thought that was so important, we think it's important that we read spiritual experience at this meeting, so we kind of know what exactly that is or what that looks like. And to read spiritual experience, I've asked Michael to read that for me.
I'm Michael. I'm an alcoholic. The term spiritual experience and spiritual awakening are used many times in this book, which upon careful reading shows that the personality change sufficient to bring about recovery from alcoholism has manifested itself among us in many different forms. Yet it is true that our first printing gave many readers the impression that these personality changes or religious experiences must be in the nature of sudden and spectacular upheavals. Happily for everyone, this conclusion is erroneous. In the first few chapters, a number of sudden revolutionary changes are described. Though it was not our intention to create such an impression, many alcoholics have nevertheless concluded that in order to recover, they must acquire an immediate and overwhelming God consciousness, followed at once by a vast change in feeling and outlook. Among a rapidly growing membership of thousands of alcoholics, such transformations, though frequent, are by no means the rule. Most of our experiences are what the psychologist William James calls the educational variety, because they develop slowly over a period of time. Quite often, friends of the newcomer are aware of the difference long before he is himself. He finally realizes that he has undergone a profound alteration in his reaction to life, that such a change could hardly have been brought about by himself alone. What often takes place in a few months could seldom have been accomplished by years of self-discipline. With few exceptions, our members find that they have tapped an unsuspected inner resource which they presently identify with their own conception of a power greater than themselves. Most of us think this awareness of a power greater than ourselves is the essence of spiritual experience. Our more religious members call it God consciousness. Most empathetically, we wish to say that any alcoholic capable of honestly facing his problems in the light of our experience can recover, provided he does not close his mind to all spiritual concepts. He can only be defeated by an attitude of intolerance or belligerent denial. We find that no one need have difficulty with the spirituality of the program. Willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness are the essentials of recovery, but these are indispensable. There is a principle which is a bar against all information, which is proof against all arguments, and which cannot fail to keep a man in everlasting ignorance. That principle is contempt prior to investigation. Herbert Spencer, Alcoholics Anonymous, pages 567 and 568.
Thank you. Please refrain from disturbing others by talking or constantly getting up and back down during this meeting. We also ask you please refrain from texting, and you know, if you got to have your phone on, put it on silent if you need to take a call or something. We got a lovely lobby and parking lot area out there for you to do that. So without any further ado, this is Joe's final week with us. It's been an amazing series, and something that I know, even though I don't know Joe that well personally, something I know about him is that he does a lot of Step 12, and he's always helping other alcoholics. And you know, I'm just really looking forward to hear him talk about how he does that and how that helps him in recovery. So if everybody could please put your hands together for Joe.
Thanks, Zach. Hi, everybody. I'm an alcoholic, and my name is Joe. It's good to be here tonight. Good to see all of you here. And, wow, I tell you, this is awesome. I want to thank Mike and the group and the guys and the gals that, you know, make this all happen. I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart. This has truly been special for me in many ways. But we're here to talk about Step 12 tonight. And, you know, since Zach was so, like, committed to his jokes, I thought I'd bring one. A buddy of mine shared this from the Big Book Seminar, so some of you might know it. But a new priest was at his first Mass was so nervous he could hardly speak. After Mass, he asked the Monsignor how he had done. The Monsignor replied, "When I'm worried about getting nervous on the pulpit, I put a glass of vodka next to the water glass. If I start to get nervous, I take a sip." So next Sunday, he took the Monsignor's advice And at the beginning of the sermon, he got nervous, of course, and took a drink. He proceeded to talk up a storm. Upon his return to the office after the Mass, he found the following note on the door of his office. "Father, sip the vodka, don't gulp. There are 10 commandments, not 12. There are 12 disciples, not 10. Jesus was consecrated, not constipated. Jacob wagered his donkey. He did not bet his ass. David slew Goliath. He did not kick the shit out of him. Next Sunday, there will be a taffy pulling contest at St. Peter's, not a Peter pulling contest at St. Taffy's. We do not refer to the cross as the big T. We do not refer to Jesus Christ as the late JC. When David was hit by a rock and he was knocked off his donkey, don't say he was stoned off his ass. The Father, Son, and Holy Ghost are not referred to as Daddy Junior and Spook. That vodka will do it to you. Every time. So, you know, I am so amazed that God would take me, and he takes all of us, but to take our brokenness and make something very special out of it. He takes our brokenness and he makes it whole. You know, I had referred to, the process of refining silver. And for those of you that weren't here, it's, you know, the silversmith comes in, he gets this big smelting pot, he gets all the impure silver and brings it up to a very high degree and it starts to boil. And what happens is the impurities will come to the top. And every so often, the silversmith will come in with this huge wooden ladle and ladle off and scrape off the crud that comes to the top. Well, he continues this process and the silver gets more and more pure. And the way he knows it's pure silver is when he comes in and he goes to ladle off the crud and he sees his own reflection in the pot. And that's exactly what God does with us. Exactly what he does with us through this process. If you knew the history of AA, and I encourage everybody in here to read the history, to really read up, to own this thing, to make it part of you, so that when this whole transformation thing happens, you will protect it with your life. You will stand for it in such a way where nobody will diminish its value around you without you speaking boldly. Right? And have good evidence and good knowledge and good experience to back it up. History is very important. Most people, unfortunately, in AA, the youngsters today and the new people coming out to you, they don't teach history. They don't teach history in treatment centers, especially about this process. So I beg you, you know, when you come in, read the history. You know, when we get here, we're in 1,000 different pieces. We're so fractured, so broken. We don't know what's up, what's down, what's good, what's bad. All we want is to just feel like a somebody, to feel like something, to feel some value to humanity, some reason to be here. I'm going to tell you, when I got here, I wanted to die. Matter of fact, dying was a much better option in my mind. It was much more attractive to me to just die than live. And you know what? What's amazing is that having said that, little did I know that as I began this process, from the moment I conceded to my innermost self that I was truly powerless because of the information that was presented to me by that man, little did I know that I was going to be given life. Little did I know that I literally had died inside. There was only a flicker, and I know what that flicker is. And I know who he is. You see, today I didn't know him when I got here. I had heard about him, was educated about him, I had a full knowledge of who he was. I speak to you, he as in God. capital H, right? But I didn't know whose I was. I guarantee, I believe this, you will never know who you are until you know whose you are. Right? I am His. He is mine. And that is all a result of this 12-step program. Okay? I'm just going to give you kind of like this, you know, this is just my opinion, and this is what I kind of came up with. It's not written anywhere except on my own paper. See, it was said a little over 2,000 years ago by the God of my understanding that we as human beings, that humanity, and this was His teaching, that we needed to be born again, but not of the body, but of the Spirit. And that would take tremendous, to have heard that back then, or to even hear it now, it's like, it's so mind-boggling that it doesn't make any sense at all, right? That I would have to renounce everything that I know in order to learn something new. How do you do that? How do you take a 44-year-old man and tell him that the way he thinks it is just isn't the way it is? It's just not the way it is. That's what he said. That's not the way it is, Joe. The way you think it is just not the way it is. Listen, I had plenty of evidence to back that up. I had plenty of evidence to actually make that statement from him factual. But I couldn't grasp it. I couldn't put my head around it. So this thing, this recipe, this prescription that I believe was given to us in a very divine fashion. Anything that really is profound and explosive and super impactful and given to us by men, I believe is instilled to them, and that's how it's given to us. Where you read it and you go, oh my God, that is so godly, right? The step one and two, admitted that I was powerless over alcohol, that my life had become unmanageable, that my thinking had become unmanageable, right? Is the act number one? Is the act of realizing? In other words, it's coming to grips with a truth that they're trying to impact upon me. The act of realizing is the act of figuring out or becoming aware, right? The act of realizing is making real. Well, you can't tell me that my life, that I'm powerless over alcohol and drugs and that my life's unmanageable just because you're telling me that. I'm not going to buy it. You got to prove it to me. I'm that kind of guy. You got to prove it to me. You got to show me based on, you got to have some definition, some explanation to make me go, oh my God, you're 100% right. Right? So, doctor's opinion gives us that information of powerlessness. In a nutshell, it basically says that when you start, you can't stop or control it. And when you're stopped, you can't stop starting. Because of this desire, this obsessive thought that comes in and makes it okay. It gives you permission to put the very toxic substance, poison that's killing you in your body, thinking it's not going to hurt you. Wow, I mean, that made it real for me. Because I knew that when I began, I couldn't stop. No matter what I said, no matter how I felt, no matter what I stood to lose, no matter what the devastation was, right? And I knew that no matter how much I stood to have happened in my life, that would be evidence for anybody to never do it again. I could do it again. But you got to do that on a lie. You can't do it on the truth. You can't say, hey, I'm going to go to jail and I'm going to lose my family and lose my kids. And, you know, so here goes. Right? You have to create the lie. So that doctor's opinion, there's a solution. You know, the whole argument about why it's better to believe than not believe, why I have to succumb or concede that no human power has been able to remove that lie whenever it came about that would give me the ability to start again, right? I had to concede that. And the only way to concede it was to look over my shoulder into my past. It was that easy. See, I had everything. I had everything I needed to convince me that this was true. And if you can't get convinced based on what you went through, wow, maybe you just haven't had enough. I mean, that's what was told to me. You haven't had enough. Go do some more. Get done. Right? So it was very easy, especially when I read more about alcoholism. My God, you know, the Jim the car salesman, you know, he puts whiskey in his milk thinking it's going to be, that's the ticket. I just mix whiskey with milk. It won't hurt me on a full stomach. I'll just smoke a little crack, but I'll eat before I do it. Oh no, I'll give my best friend all my paycheck and I'll keep 20. I'll just go do a 20. That's the ticket. Do you see how crazy that is? That is really where we go from sanity to insanity. Just like that. So, you know, more about alcoholism, the fact that, you know, that whatever's going on in our mind, that we can have that conversation a day, a week, or a month prior, whatever it says in there, you know what I'm talking about. Better to read than try to recall. That we've lost the ability to choose whether we're going to drink or not. Oh, I wanted to read one other thing too, because we are on step 12 tonight. Hold on. I heard four. Oh, it said, I'm sorry, it was in their solution. The fact is that most alcoholics, for reasons yet obscure, have lost the power of choice in drink and drug, right? Lost the power to choose whether we're going to do it or not. We're doing it. I mean, that's our experience. Before we got here, we couldn't stop doing it. It says our so-called willpower becomes practically non-existent. And listen, there's Harvard law grads in here. There's all kinds of people in here, smart people. Really dumb when it comes to alcoholism. That's it. I mean, it is what it is. The smartness doesn't keep you from picking up, right? It says we're unable at certain times to bring into our consciousness with sufficient force the memory of the suffering and humiliation of even a day, a week, or a month ago. We're without defense. So, I mean, once that really gets ingrained in you, you know that, unfortunately, the bad news is this is all about God. The good news is it's all about God. Right? I have to approach a subject that I've been ignoring and avoiding and, you know, resisting. But in the light of what always happens, what have I got to lose? Right? What have I got to lose here? It's only my life. I don't know. Door number one, die. Door number two, live. Problem is, with alcoholics, we got to stand back and we got to go, how long do I got to think about that? It's crazy. So I come to those conclusions and I concede them based on my truth, my evidence, right? So step three would be submission, making a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God as I understood him. regardless of what that understanding was, it doesn't matter if it was great, if it was, super or terrible or, whatever. It doesn't matter. God is God. What's my experience with that term, that word, that deity? Whatever it is, it doesn't matter. But I'm dying, so why wouldn't I be at least willing to believe that the power you're talking about of God could restore me to sanity? So it's like I got door number two, door number one, right? But in that process, I have to declare that he's going to be my boss, that he's going to be the manager of my life from this point forward. That's what step three is asking us to do. To turn my thoughts and my life, my actions over to the care of God. To the care of God. Right? Does it mean I got to go out and beat a tambourine or act holy or, quote scripture or any of that stuff? It just means that I got to stop relying on the guy in the mirror from running my life. And my sponsor is that messenger that I choose, that I believe is connected to him to manage my life, to make my decisions for me, because I can't. Listen, when I got here, this is what I would have settled for. At that time, at that moment in time, was to be able to get up off the couch and walk 10 feet without feeling like I was going to pass out and go out. Just be able to walk 10 feet. That's how broken I was. Just to walk 10 feet and be able to keep my breath. I don't know how your experience was, but I was actually dying. I was physiologically dying when I got here. So I must submit, which means I've got to submit to this authority. Oh my God. I've got to be obedient, at least to the best of my ability. Luckily, I had a guy in my life that would not let me be disobedient. He'd let me be disobedient, but he'd fetch me up real quick and say, look, he's the one that told me, you can do anything you want to do, Joe, as long as you're willing to pay the price. I didn't want to pay any more prices. Listen, we've all paid enough prices from our own will. This world has been crushed by self-will. And who do we blame? Him. Right? So the fact remains, I want to be disobedient because that's my default. That's my habitual behavior. That's been ingrained in me because I've been disobedient all my life. I've been a habitual liar all my life. I've been selfish and self-centered most of my life. So I come in here just self-consumed, not even knowing how to live as a decent, mature man. Wow. I had to be born again. That guy had to die. And I get a program where I actually get to have that happen. I get to leave him in my rearview mirror and he slowly fades away as long as I stay committed and devoted earnestly and sincerely to this. What you get is exactly what you put into it. So the level of horrific beating, the annihilation of all things worthwhile in life, that was enough for me. Have I become a sponge? No. I've resisted. I've fought. I've disobeyed. All through the process. But I have always maintained. And I believe it's by the grace of God. I've always maintained the desire. Think about this. The desire to become better. See, if I didn't desire to become better, I'd just be him. Right? So through that submission, through submitting to his authority, to his divine deity, See, in we agnostics, see, I got sober. I got stopped a lot of times. I got sober. I didn't get sober. I got stopped. I got abstinent. I got undrunk and undrugged. And, you know, I'd put some months together that way. And then I'd relapse. And I wouldn't relapse. I didn't have anything to relapse for. I retoxed, right? I've told you that. And I retoxed, and I retoxed, and I retoxed. And then I saw something in we agnostics, and I understood why I never really was able to stay stopped. It asks us a question in we agnostics. And it asked me to ask myself this question. Is your position at this point going to be that God is everything? Or is he going to be nothing? That's big. That's big. Considered how addicted to the world I was and entrenched in it. Is he going to be everything or is he going to be nothing? Because you know what? He was never going to be everything. And I never stayed stopped. Now, I don't know what your experience is going to be. I really don't. I don't know what it's been. I have a feeling I know what a few of yours have been because of the incredible length of sobrieties that I know that's in this room. God is either going to be everything or he's going to be nothing, Joe. What is your decision to be? What's your choice to be? Like, what are you going to do? Are you going to really get involved? Are you going to really get in and do this thing? Let it consume you? And get the prize? Or are you just going to go half at it? And that's what I chose to do, middle of the road solution. You know, I would come in and I would conditionally do what I would have this conditional, this silent conditional contract with people. Oh yeah, I'm in. I want it all. I'll do anything. And I meant it. But when it came to giving up old behaviors or keeping my eyes off her and them and trying to get that relationship back too soon or that money back too soon and get that car. You know, my MO was job, car, girl, drunk. That's what it was. They're saying I got to put him first. See, that's what this says. That I must submit. And I, you know, once I did make that decision that he was going to be everything, that I was really going to go 100% into this thing. And if I didn't like it at the end, everybody kept telling me, if you know, do this thing, and if you don't like it at the end, then go out and have a drink. You don't like it, just leave. Whatever. Well, you don't do that. You just don't do that because of what happens, right? Submit. And then, of course, when we submit, when we make the decision to seek earnestly, with all everything I got, where I'm going to get rid of all the... Listen, this, I'm just saying this. Some people can do this with a half devotion. I tried that. I couldn't stop. I couldn't stay stopped. That's just for me. But when I decided to remove any of the things that were influencing me in my addiction, in my active addiction... In other words, all the conditions that I wouldn't let go of, all the things that I wanted to hang on to, all the things that I wanted to bring into recovery, when I was ready to put them aside, actually I didn't put them aside, I drank them and drugged them away. I was such a loner when I got here. I was so alone. I had nothing. I had the clothes on my back. That was it. Those that have a lot of stuff when they get here, man, I don't know. That would be a hard road because, you know what, I had stuff a lot of times coming into this thing and lost it all anyway. Because I always had it before him. He wasn't everything. It was everything. Or at least she was. Now I'm not saying that we have to dissolve ourselves of our relationships when we get here. That's not what I'm saying at all. The book says I should be reasonably sure of my recovery, not my abstinence, but my recovery before I get back involved with the relationship of the wife or the girl or whatever. If I already have one coming in. But if I don't have one coming in, I sure don't need to be getting one. That's just for me, right? It can't be more important. Because you know what it does? It consumes my mind. It consumes my emotions. I get involved in a relationship. Mike calls it manslaughter and a 13-step manslaughter. I get involved in a relationship. And immediately, I come in and I'm really intending to do this and give it all, my all. And then I get a girl, and girls, I'm talking about, you get the guys, right? Because we're so codependent. We need somebody to validate us. We need somebody to make us feel like somebody, right? And I get the girl, and immediately, 70% of my emotional thought and focus go right on her. What's she thinking? What's she doing? Is she on Facebook? Who's she talking to? Think about it. And I was dying, and I just said, no, I'm gonna be devoted here. I'm gonna give this thing my whole heart. And my whole focus. And all of a sudden it's gone. And I wonder why I can't stay stopped. Isn't that amazing? And then I blame somebody. Him. That freaking AA doesn't work. I tried, it doesn't work. I was such a terrible student. So he became everything through brokenness, through annihilation of all things worthwhile in life. He became everything. And I was able for the first time to do the readings and do the exercises the way he wanted me to do it. And we get together and we cover the material, and I go, and all of a sudden I started to have this experience like, whoa, that's what that says? Oh my God. You know what I mean? It's like, holy mackerel, things are starting to really clear up. I'm starting to feel like I'm contributing to the betterment of my own life. Like I'm really starting to contribute to a life. Right? That's different from anything I'd ever known. I'm starting to feel a little freer. I make this decision to seek earnestly, sincerely. And they say when you do that, all sorts of remarkable things follow. But I can't contaminate it. You understand that? We all do. I come in, I see this clear glass of water that's pure, and it's the recovered Joe. It's the transformed butterfly that I wanted to become. And then all of a sudden I start to get these earthly desires. I start to get kind of undevoted. I start to slack off and get, you know, like Peter says, lean back into these things. And so here's this nasty, stinky, dirty glass of water that I represented when I got here. And I'm just... casino, yeah. Strip club, yeah. What, that can't hurt anything. Little white lie. Lie of omission. Embellish the lie. Lie, lie, lie. And all of a sudden, I'm this guy again. He's nowhere to be found, and either is my recovery. I'm done, right? So I submit. I really submit. I, AKA surrender. Surrender, right? No conditions, just recovery. That's what I want. And I got my teacher, right? And he instructs me to surround myself with people that are teachable and moving in the same direction, that want the same thing, to leave all my homeboys behind. Behind. It's an old life. The things that I was so attracted to when I got here, that I was attracted to all my life, being popular, being applauded, being recognized, looking good, being right, being in control. All that garbage, it had to die. It had to die with him. I had to find out what was on the other side. I had to. It's either that or give me a freaking gun, I'm going out. So I do. So I submit. When I submit and I surrender and I make the decision to seek him, I do this investigation. That's step four. After I do the investigation and identify all my fears and my harms and my resentments and my defects and all this method, this game, this thing that people get when I show up, I talk about it to somebody. I confess it to him, to another man. And it goes from inside to outside. And I start to feel less burdened and more free. Freedom. I mean, this whole thing's about freedom. Freedom from bondage. Bondage of me. My own self-imposed bondage. My self-imposed prison cell. Step 6 and 7 is a purification process. Purification and refinement, where I take the guy that I can't, that I want to die, and I use that as a template to become the man that I can be by not being that guy, not being those things, not being a liar, not being a gamer, you know, not seeking grandiose popularity. And I start to work towards this guy that I believe he wants me to be and that my sponsor is instructing me to be. And I'm surrounding myself with people that will call me out when he shows up. You know? Because they love me enough to stand for me that way. They're not going to sell out of me. That's the people I want around me. I don't want sellouts around me. I don't want people blowing smoke up my butt around me. I don't want people feeding my ego around me. Because that's a death trap for me, right? So I go through this purification process. And then I go through this reconciliation process in 8 and 9. So in the first 3 steps, I get right with him. In the next few steps, I get right with me. And then in the next few steps, I get right with you. And when I get right with you, that's the expression to him that I really want to have a relationship with him. It's how I am with you that shows him how much I love him. I don't do it for the pat on the back or the stroke anymore. I happen to believe I'm storing my treasures up in there. I really do believe that. And then step 10 is all about the incorporation of this new design. Inventory, confession, commitment to change, asking God for help, and making amends when necessary. 4 through 9 all the time. That's the new me. And I'm repetition's the mother of all skill. I'm doing it every day and I'm preparing. Preparation, execution, right? Preparation is step 3 when I open my eyes. From the untreated alcoholic that I am when I open my eyes to the treated one when I ask God to run my life that day. And this is the way I'm going to let God run my life. I'm going to commit to participate in the betterment of me for him by inventory, confession, commitment to change, asking him for help, and making amends where necessary. And then it's habit, right? Step 11 is all about sanctification. We talked about that last week. This is where I become a man of, I stop being a man, you know, I'm still a man in the world, but I'm not a man of the world anymore. I'm not addicted to the world anymore. Matter of fact, I'm okay with what I got. I don't need to be glamorous. I don't need to be like all flashy and stuff. Because I've realized what the value of a man's heart is. I realize the value of what your reflection that you give off is if it's of him. You see, I like to sleep at night. I like to sleep a lot, but I like to sleep at night particularly. I'm a napper. I love my nap. Don't bother me with my nap. Matter of fact, I got a sign that I put on my door when I'm napping. It says closed, a.k.a. do not disturb. Me and my dogs are napping. But I like, when I lay down, I don't want to have a mind that is consumed with everything. Because then I don't sleep. I don't like walking around having a conversation with you and thinking about something that happened yesterday. Right? See, I know this thing works. I know, with beyond the shadow of a doubt, the incredible value. I know the diamond that we have been given simply by being, you know, we get given this affliction of drug addiction and alcoholism. and with it. Because God has chosen us to reflect Him, to serve Him in a very powerful, very, it's a huge, huge responsibility to be able to take somebody that's broken just like us and literally be used to save their life. My God, man, are you kidding me? So through 11, we pray, we meditate, we invite Him in, we have conversation. He's my counselor, He's my friend, He's my father, He's my manager, He's my protector. He's everything to me, everything. How do I show Him that I love Him so much? It's how I am with you. I'm still selfish and self-centered to the core, but I don't desire to be. I don't want to be. I know the way not to be is to help somebody else. So, step 12 is all about manifesting that, right? How do I let you see Him in me? How do I let you hear Him in me? How do I let you know Him in me? That man told me, he says, this thing's all about, it's not about getting up here and talking about the God of your understanding and and just trying to, you know, impress people about how spiritual you are. This whole thing's about being able to go tell the world about your God without uttering a word, without saying nothing. Who are you being? Who are you helping? We've had the greatest gift known to mankind given to us right here through this thing. Absolute guarantee. All you got to be is an alcoholic and a drug addict to really to have this at your disposal. Everybody's could gain value by it. Everybody's addicted to something, trust me. Especially when they look in the mirror. Right? So, we carry this message. Unfortunately, a lot of meetings you go to, that's not the message that you hear. I hope and pray that it changes. I think the more that we talk about this message, people will be attracted and they'll want it. Somebody, you know, listen. You can't transmit, it says it in vision, you can't transmit something you don't have. So unfortunately, if somebody gets up and talks, you know, and then, you know, 10 to the hour and when they're supposed to close, they're just getting out of high school after hearing all this carnage and rip-roar and drama and blah, blah, blah. It's because they didn't get this. What do you want? You know, it's like, really, what do you want? What do you want? I've never asked that question. What do you want, Joe? I just want to be me, not worry about what other people think of me. I don't want to be consumed with having to get drugs and alcohol to get some kind of ease and comfort in my body because I'm an absolute nightmare on the inside and I can't let anybody know. I want to have a purpose. I want to know what it's like to feel like I'm making a difference, like my life means something, it's valuable. I want a legacy. Then when I die, because I'm going to die someday, that people will be reflecting on me and saying, man, he made a difference in my life. He had a positive influence in my life. Instead of what it could have been. Like on my tombstone, what are you going to write? I wouldn't even have a tombstone at one point in my life. Now I just want, Joe's just a man Like any other man, he just wanted to have God's heart, you know? A man after God's heart. That's all I want. So I'm going to close with this little thing. You know, we talk about the 12-step work. We got to stand ready to do this thing. And I've done many with that man right there. And I've had an opportunity. I'm actually, God has given me a wonderful situation in life where I'm able to help men a lot. And it's not always easy, but it's very rewarding. Especially when the disease is kicking butt so bad right now. Because they're not, people aren't engaging in the AA program. They're doing BB or CC. I did it for a long time. That's my version of BB and CC is my program. I mean, so yesterday I'm driving this fella to Orlando because that's the only place that his insurance would take, St. Cloud. And suffering. Very close to putting a bullet in his head. And I just happened to call because I knew he was off the grid and I knew he had to be suffering, and I heard that he was going through some depression and stuff. So I called, and he was open to hearing and talking. And then the next day, I went over to his house. I said, let's get this right, you know. And so I drove him over to St. Cloud, and everything went really well. Got him in, and turned around, and I'd come back, and about 4 o'clock in the about 3:30, 4 o'clock, I'm on the turnpike heading south, just this side of Okeechobee Boulevard in West Palm Beach, and my tire blows. And just before that, I talked to Mike, and I said, Mike, just pray for the rest of my trip, you know, back that it's safe and da-da-da. And he says, absolutely. And the next thing I know, I get a blowout and pull over to the side of the road. The tire was shredded. I was basically on the rim. Well, I had my car serviced about three or four weeks prior where they had to do some work on the CV boot. So they had to remove one of the tires. Well, on my car, I got a VW. And they had this special lug nut. There's five lug nuts, but one of them is special where it's a lot. It's you got to have a lug key where it fits in the lug. You know, you can't, so you don't steal a tire. Well, VW didn't put the lug nut back in the car, the key. So I'm stranded on the turnpike. I'm there for 2.5 hours, right? And I look all over for that key. Well, anyway, I called. By that time it was after 5 o'clock, so I called Volkswagen. They're closed. I call the service department, sales parts department. I call the one in West Palm Beach. They're closed. But we'll send you a tow truck. So I got to wait another hour for the tow truck. So the tow truck comes, put on a flatbed. We have to go south to go north. We come back. We get to the Schumacher VW. Closed. The guy, one of the salesmen, I said, you got a 2007 Passat? I said, I need a lug key. He says, no. He says, the best I can do is give you one of those envelopes. You just fill it out, put your keys in it, and they'll get to it in the morning. Man, oh, man. Right? And but little did I know, I was about to be shown his power. Because as I'm in the car calling my sister, talking to her about coming to get me and taking me back to Pompano and blah, 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 all of a sudden I see something in the back, in my rearview mirror, and it looked like a light was flickering. And I didn't pay any mind because, you know, it was about dark. And then all of a sudden I see clear through the this is like a big double bay door, and it starts to come up. The service department. I'm backed up to it, right? This is where the tow truck let me go. And I turn around, and there's a service guy walking out the door. And I got out of the car. I said, dude. I said, take a look at my tire. I said, is there any way we can find a lug key for this car? He goes, yeah. He goes back. He gets the jack. He gets the drill. Tire's changed in 5 minutes. Answer to a prayer. You see, there's things that happen in our life where you can consider it circumstance. Or you can say, where the heck did that come from? See, I know where it comes from. I know that my God absolutely adores me, or he wouldn't have taken that broken man and made him whole. You know what? Tomorrow, I could go tonight. If I die tonight, if I got in a car accident tonight, and God took me home. One of the most beautiful things about this deal is that I would have no regret. Thanks for letting me be here.
Can we get another round of applause? Thank Joe one more time. That was awesome. Thank you. And now we have Fred for our secretary's report. Please open the roll.
Good evening. My name is Fred, and I'm your recovered alcoholic secretary. In keeping with the seven tradition, which states that every group shall be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions, the baskets are now going around. I've asked Glenn to read the recovered statement. We read this notice to explain why many people in this group identify as recovered rather than recovering and what it exactly means to be a recovered alcoholic.
Good evening. My name is Glenn, and I'm an alcoholic. Recovered. We are not cured of alcoholism. Recovered, but not cured. That presents a conflict to some alcoholics. If we were cured, we would be able to drink responsibly. No, we are not cured. The allergic reaction to alcohol will remain with us for our lifetime. But we have been restored to sanity. That was the problem. The main problem of the alcoholic centers in his mind rather than in the body. We are now sane where alcohol is concerned. Consequently, we have recovered. Thank you so much.
...1940-style Big Book sponsorship, from the fourth to the second edition, Alcoholics Anonymous. Of alcoholics who came to AA and really tried, 50% got sobered at once and remained that way, 25% sobered up after some relapses, and among the remainder, those who stayed on with AA showed improvement. What we've seen, felt, and come to believe and experience is that God has not changed over time, and neither should the sacred approach back to his loving arms. The statistics above suggest a 75% success rate. Can I have a show of hands of recovered alcoholics? Is there anyone in need of a sponsor tonight? Please raise your hand. Please join us Monday nights. We have a Big Book study meeting on the third floor in the same building where the Big Book comes alive. Fellowship is at 6:30 and the meeting itself starts at 7:15. We have large print Big Book and Big Book dictionaries for sale. We meet every Thursday, starting promptly at 7:15, and we ask that you be courteous and ready again at the sound of the bells. Thank you, guys, and I'll see you next week.
We have tonight's session and all other past speaker podcasts to listen to for free online at alcoholicsandgod.org. And just real quick before we close, I'd like to say this has been an amazing series. Joe, you truly speak from the heart, and I've gotten something out of every week that you spoke here. And as a group, to say thank you, we got you this limited edition, collector's edition, Alcoholics Anonymous coffee mug. And there's a bunch of goodies in here, pin and all this stuff. So. All right. Thank you so much. I would also like to invite everybody to our Monday night. They're also really durable, so. Oh, man, that's great. All right. I'd also like to invite everybody to our Monday night big book study. If you're new, you don't know the book, it's a great meeting to come to. If you've been around for a little while and you're sponsoring, even better meeting to come to. Come check it out. It's in this building on the third floor, Monday night, same time as this meeting. And anybody who wishes to thank Joe, just please line up down the center aisle. Let's have another moment of silence, and then we'll close with the Lord's Prayer. Our Father,
who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and all glory, forever and ever. Amen.
Godspeed.
Never again, now that I understand. zan, zan, zan. Oh, when you're smiling, when you're smiling, the whole world smiles with you, baby, baby. Yes, when you're laughing, when you're laughing, yes, the sun comes shining through. But when you're crying, you bring on the rain. So stop your sighing, baby, and be happy again. Yes, and keep on smiling.